This Torah class is brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.
We're going to start with a nice word. Parsha told us in the Or Yitzchok for Rabbi Yitzchok Radvila, son of the Zlotcher Magid. He says an interesting Torah this week about Yankov and Esav. He says, why do we need Esav in this world? Yankov is good. Avrom, Yitzchok, Yankov. We need the Uvas HaKadoshim to start Klal Yisrael. Where does Esav come in? So he says that we need Esav because in order to achieve the Tachlis Vavoyde, he calls it, you know, what we're really trying to achieve, we have to be Mamaz Bara. A person has to achieve a level where not only does he want to do good, but he dislikes the bad. You have to despise all that is evil and bad. In order for that, we have to have bad in this world. So in order to get this Madraigo or have this kind of Avoyde for Hashem, there was a Yaakov and an Esav. We need the bad. And he says that he was in Gan Eden saying a drusha. Yitzchok Radvila often in the Sefer talks about these things, how in his dreams he was in Shemayim. And over there he remembers repeating part of this drish, and he said that the Pusik says, V'havta Hashem l'keir v'chol v'avchu, Chazal tells us b'shnai yitzreichu, with the Yetzatoiv and the Yetzahara. Where did the Yetzahara come in? How do you serve Hashem with the Yetzahara? And he says that some of these middos that we have to serve Hashem with are really coming from the Yetzahara. There's a lot of bad that when you transfer it into the good, Chedev Sedeshmat, so there's a certain wild attitude that the Yetzahara gives a person, which he's able to channel in the right direction, and that's also part of the good. So there's like two ideas. One idea of Esav is to know what's not good and to stay away from, and another idea of Esav is to actually contribute to our Avoida. And, you know, this is well known from the Baal Shem Tov. When you see somebody else doing something wrong, right? So the Baal Shem Tov says that if you see someone doing something wrong and you're noticing it, it must be because you also have some of that in you. Otherwise, you wouldn't have noticed it. So that's one way to look at things. You're seeing someone do something bad, you learn from the bad to find it within yourself and to take care of it. Another thing that this wouldn't talk about, when you notice someone doing something bad, is to know what's not good and to stay away from it. Like we were just saying, you know, to be mamaz bara. So very often, you know, when it comes to relationships, you notice someone doing something wrong and you're upset at someone for doing something wrong and you're wondering why they're doing something wrong. There's two ways to look at it, two good ways to look at it. Well, either you could do it the wrong way and just be upset at somebody and look down at them, make them feel bad and stay away from them and not get along with them. Or you could either choose to decide that maybe I also have some of that problem. Well, no, my problem is not as big as that person's. Well, maybe not as big. But maybe you could learn from the fact that I'm noticing that this is very unpleasant. Let me see if I also maybe, you know, violate this thing, or maybe I also do something wrong over here that I can learn from. That's the first thing. Just to find it within yourself. And the other thing is that even if you can't find it within yourself, at least realize how not good it is and make sure to stay very far away from it. So let me read a question. Also something I think that we must have covered many times already, but you know, these things keep on coming up, and it's good to keep on reviewing the ideas. Dear Begrom, please address in a lecture if possible. Thank you for your enlightening shiurim, which are unique in their clarity, common sense, and pure Torah hashkofa. Thank you. My wife is addicted to her smartphone. She is on it all the times of day and night, literally for hours on end. When I come home from work, she barely lifts her eyes to greet me from her phone. Most of her quote-unquote conversations with me are actually just sharing with me some quote or story she read from her phone, which she seems to find interesting. These two are done without even lifting her eyes from the screen. I have tried to point out to her numerous times about this very disturbing behavior, but to no avail. Whenever I say something, she'll become defensive and accuse me of being an addict to my own phone. She'll then look for a time that I glance at my screen and take a picture of it, send it to me, and say, "You see, you're the one who's addicted." To be clear, I do at times overuse my screen time. However, there's no comparison with my wife's overuse. I can easily put my phone down for hours at a time and rarely, if ever, address her or anyone else while glancing at my screen. I'm really unsure how to proceed here, and I would greatly appreciate your guidance. Sincerely, a baffled husband. Okay. So, yeah, this is very sadly common. Sadly common, right, in today's day and age, where people are totally stuck with their telephones and a lot of other things, and just hearing a question like this read should just make people think, like, I hope that wasn't said about me. I hope it will never be able to be said about me. I hope that wasn't describing something that I look like or things like that. Now, just to discuss the idea of phone addiction, just to put it out there, it's basically like any other addiction, right? People are definitely, it's real, people are definitely addicted to their phones, regardless of if you can get a diagnosis for it or not, or if you go to rehab for it, but it's an addiction like anything else. It's very hard to overcome once you get really tied in, obviously, and get used to something. And it makes life unmanageable, just like any other addiction. Addiction, by definition, means that somebody's actually addicted to something, and by the time it's either compulsive or it's not something that they're in control of, it definitely disturbs, it makes their life unmanageable. It's important for husband and wife both to understand this, regardless of who's addicted to what. The person who's addicted to something should know it. Not always does knowing it help, but at least acknowledging, yes, I am addicted. This is very hard for me to overcome. I see I'm abusing this and I'm ruining my life, and maybe I could or can't do something about it, but at least acknowledge it and know to try to do something about it. And for the spouse of someone who's addicted to anything, to know that this is, if we'll call it addiction, is very hard to overcome. It doesn't mean that you're just okay with the fact that somebody else, when you think it's, you know, you're looking down at somebody for it or think it's nothing. Addiction means that somebody is struggling with something that is a very great challenge. It's sad when somebody is living with somebody who is either addicted or challenged by something greatly, and people think, oh, it's nothing. It's nothing. It's not a big deal. Sometimes it comes with an attitude of, you're not really addicted to that, so why do you keep on doing it? Well, maybe that person is struggling with addiction and they need help. You know, the other way that people sometimes don't acknowledge what's really going on is when somebody is addicted to something and the spouse wants to fool themselves. No, it's nothing. It's nothing. My husband's not really an alcoholic. He told me he's not going to drink anymore. What do you mean? But he just slammed his car into something and he just found him in the street the other day. Yeah, but he said it won't happen again. It's just as bad as when the addict himself is fooling himself as when the person living with them doesn't realize that this is a big issue. And I'm only saying this because Mom was just recently, I was talking to somebody whose spouse seemed to be heavily addicted to something very not good. And he was like, no, I think it's okay by now. And you know, I'm thinking to myself, I don't know if I should tell you that you're fooling yourself, or I shouldn't tell you that you're fooling yourself, it's better this way. But you know, just to think, I'm away from the phone addiction for a minute, I'm just saying that addiction is real, and sometimes people are not so in control of themselves. I don't want to go into the philosophy of Bechira, and what addiction really means, and if there's such a thing or not such a thing as somebody, you know, not in control of themselves, but it's definitely a big issue. So just discussing this, and having people talk about it, and know, yes, there is such a thing as being addicted and connected to your phone in a way that's not good and not healthy, especially when it comes to smartphones and things that are much more stimulating, if you want to call it. These things are real. A lot of times we hear so much awareness about it, and being spoken about more in like, you know, we're trying to make a hasaras, we're trying to get people, you know, but when you see it, this is real life, this is not hasaras, you know. Just recently, somebody was talking to me about a situation where there was an unfiltered device sitting around. Of course, it was a mistake, and a child got access to it, and the worst things happened. In just a few days, the worst things happened due to that. And, you know, by now, we're looking for help, right? And when I hear these things, like, wow, this is the perfect case study for all those papers and all those awareness groups and all the events that people... This happens every day. And when it happens, people are like, yeah, really? It really happens? Well, they're just saying a story about it. Well, when you hear these things, yes, they really happen. There are people that are so addicted to their phones and their devices and whatever else that they don't have time to look at their spouse, and they don't have time to acknowledge that they're misusing this, and that their house and children and homes and whatever families are totally dysfunctional. I hear about it all the time. Very sad. Interesting how for some, also just a week ago, somebody was telling me that in his house, in his relationship, in his marriage, Shabbos is the only normal time. The fact that his wife doesn't have the phone, she mamish becomes a normal person, he tells me. A whole week you can't talk to her, she's nervous and she's snappy, whether it's because she wants to get back to her phone or because she's out or whatever it is. And Shabbos, you could talk to her. He said, it's mamish, like, I don't think she realizes that you could finally have a conversation with her. And she's smiley and she's relaxed and Matzah Shabbos comes and she's like back into her thing. She's the only thing I could attribute it to is the fact that by this month she's already on her phone and with her phone, and until the next month of Erev Shabbos she's not here. Interestingly, for some people Shabbos they're dead. They get so used to being stimulated by technology that Shabbos they're like dried out and they want to sleep a whole day and there's nothing to them anymore. The technology sucked all the life out of them during the week, and then when Shabbos is there and they don't have that. Fortunate for Shabbos, unfortunate for their commitment to Shemitah Shabbos, there's nothing left. So this is an issue that's just worth talking about, and people should know that, yes, don't fall into the trap, or at least try to get out of the trap of being connected to something that's taking away your mind and your focus from everything important in personal or family life. Now, communicating to your wife about this issue that she has, which you claim that it's totally I'm taking over her life over here, is an art. Communication in general is an art. There are topics that you could communicate about, and there are people that you could communicate to without knowing the art of communication. There are easy topics and easy people. There are people that never have to learn, how do you say something? So how should I word it? When should I bring it up? They don't know what that means. They're living with someone that's not complicated, or they're dealing with a relationship or topics or ideas that are not complicated. It's okay. But with some people, it is a little more complicated. So when you're dealing with something that somebody finds challenging and they get defensive about, because you're criticizing them, or you're dealing with somebody who just by nature or for whatever other reason gets sensitive about things and gets defensive about things, you just have to realize, okay, this is not working. And when you write, you know, I tried pointing out numerous times, and whenever I say something, so just slow down. Don't do it numerous times and don't make the same mistake again and again before you realize that it's not working. It's not working. Either because your wife is feeling challenged by the fact that she's feeling very guilty about what she's doing, or she's just someone who doesn't like when you tell her anything she doesn't like to hear in general. But if somebody's getting defensive, regardless of how right or wrong they are, or how nice or not nice you were about it, just think about your message. How was it said? When was it said? And just realize that, okay, that I'm not going to do again. If I could come up with a better way to do it, I'll do it, but I'm not going to do what doesn't work. That's first of all. It doesn't mean that when somebody gets defensive and starts being critical back and telling you that you're the addict with the phone and whatever, don't get caught into that either. Chazal tells us that, unfortunately, people have a very big difficulty with being makabel techocha. You tell someone, kissim ben aneichu, they tell you, tol koire ben aneichu. Tell someone you have a little toothpick between your eyes, take it away. Ah, a toothpick? You have a huge beam between your eyes. Now, I'm sure Chazal don't mean to say that that's always the case, that the person giving the message has bigger problems than the one they're telling it to, but that's just natural. So the point is, don't get swept in, and don't take it so literal, and don't get so offended by it, and don't wonder why it's happening. But I think it is important to rethink your message and see if you can word it better. That's for sure. So if you never tried saying something, you don't have to be so cautious and so careful. This is what I tell people all the time. You don't have to start listening to classes and reading books to figure out how to say, well, I can't tell my wife something before getting therapy. You could try. But for all those who tried, or for all the times you tried, and the topics that you tried about and didn't work, is definitely important to know how to communicate something nicely. Now, I'm not going to go into it at length, but something I talk about often, when you want to tell someone something they don't want to hear, give all the bumpers, give all the excuses. And just a week ago, somebody was telling me how much this helped him in a business meeting that he had after hearing it from me, so I'm happy that I could keep on sharing these ideas. Think about whatever your wife might answer you when you tell her what you want to tell her. Right? She might tell you that you're the one that's on your phone all the time. Okay, so tell her. Start off by saying, yeah, I know that I'm on my phone more than I should be. Start off with that so she doesn't have to tell it to you. Right? She might say something like, what do you want from me? I already prepared the supper for the kids. I'm allowed to be on my phone now. I need some time for myself. Oh, so tell it to her. I know that you prepared supper for the kids and that you need some time for yourself. I'm aware of that. Sometimes people are afraid to give the other person the excuses and to tell them that, you know, it's not so terrible what you're doing, because then they're going to feel more entitled. But it's not that way. When you take down someone's defenses and you tell them you understand them and you make them feel better before you even get to your point, very often that's a big help. So that's rule number one. Rule number two is don't turn it into a right and wrong, and also not into a me and you. These are two separate ideas, but let's just put them together. So often when you're telling someone they should be off their phone, you do it by saying, you know, it's not normal to be on your phone so much. It's so wrong to be on your phone. Everyone knows it's wrong. Right? The more wrong you make it, you're making a bigger case. You're making a stronger case by saying it's all wrong, right? But no, wrong. When you tell someone they're wrong, they get defensive. Some people more than others. Okay, so don't turn that into a right and wrong, and also not into a me, you. I'm not on my phone, while you're on your phone. You don't do this for me, I do it for you. Don't go into right and wrong, and not into me and you. People don't respond well to that, certainly not the people who didn't respond well to it till now. Stick to how you feel and what you would appreciate. I feel that it would mean so much if we could have time together. I would appreciate if we could talk more together. For me, it feels like it would just be better, and you know, it would mean so much. Talk about yourself. Don't talk about what she should be doing or how wrong she is. Don't say how right you are. You know, these are things that you want to be very, very clear to avoid in order to make sure that your message could be taken well. And don't say the but. I know you need your space, but I know, but you need your space, and I understand you. I feel that it would mean so much to me if we could have some time together, phone free, or whatever else you want to suggest. And when you're suggesting something, Be specific. Very many people don't like to be, I'm going to get technical, I want 5 minutes, 4 minutes, I want it to be over phone. I know what you want. But when you're general and vague, it becomes very hard to determine or assess if somebody's making progress, not making progress. I put away my phone. You didn't even notice how many times I put away my phone for you. I didn't notice because it almost didn't look like. No, I did. I didn't. Be specific. Be clear. I'd appreciate if this time or in this setting or this amount or this something, it just makes it easier for her to know what you want and to decide if she wants to do it and to feel good about doing it. It makes it easier for you to decide if it's happening or not. And then, of course, when anything becomes better, when it comes to anything like this, praise and appreciate any progress. Make someone feel good about what they're doing. Don't just get stuck on, but it's not what we made up and it's not exactly what I wanted. And again, this is all for situations that aren't easy to talk about. There are easier situations to deal with. But by the time you're dealing with somebody who's both relatively addicted to something which is very hard to overcome and getting defensive over the message, that's when you have to consider, okay, so let me figure out how and when in the right time, not when she's on her phone talking to you and you're getting nervous at her, at the right time to say it right and say it in a way that she won't be so offended and she'll take it well and she'll feel good about it. And very often, you'll be able to get a lot further when it comes to these situations. And this has nothing to do with phone addiction or smartphone addiction. This is for people who have flip phones and they're talking too much to sisters, or people who are too busy shopping or too busy whatever. Whenever you want to touch upon something sensitive, and whenever you want to get a message across without having it thrown back in your face, and you're used to having it thrown back in your face, then think about how you could use the right bumpers at the right time with the right feeling and the right specific suggestions and the right amount of appreciation. And I think that very often you'll get a lot further than you were getting till now. Let me just flip the coin a little bit, because your wife is telling you that you're the one that's addicted to your phone. You're telling me that you're not addicted to your phone. You are telling me that you do at times overuse your screen time. I assume everyone does, so nothing personal, but just because it might be an issue, I just want to mention the fact that it's no comparison to what she's doing. That's not the point. And this is where, as wrong as it is to tell someone, toil koirer b'aneichu, you have bigger problems than me. Why are you telling me I shouldn't talk by davening? You're a ganav. What's one have to do with the other, right? And it's wrong of a person to throw it back like that. If you're talking by davening, you shouldn't be talking by davening. As a matter of fact, even if somebody who does talk by davening tells you you shouldn't, you still should accept it, right? The point is that it doesn't matter who's telling who what. Reuven is telling Shimon, stop talking by davening. Shimon tells Reuven, I talk by davening, you talk by davening. Now, Shimon should be accepting from Reuven the fact that you're not supposed to be talking about davening. Reuven, if he ever does talk about davening, even if it's much less than what Shimon does, he should also think, you know what? He's right. What do you mean he's right? He's the one talking whole davening. I just talk by karbunas. I just talk by ulaini. I just talk by kriyas ha-Torah, not, you know, b'gavra l'gavra. It's not gaining you points to say that I'm better off than the other person. My problem isn't as bad as yours. So think about it. That's just food for thought for everyone, just on a personal level, to know how to, you know, just accept something, first of all. The second thing is that there might be truth to it, too. By the time you're trying to get someone to acknowledge they're doing something wrong, but you have a similar issue, even if it's not as bad, you're making it so much harder for the other person to accept what you're saying. I think on some level, we're all very dependent on our phones by now. Very dependent on our phones by now. I say this as a joke often, but it's not a joke. Rarely, I mean, people come to my office every day, and people leave things behind almost every day. One guy can leave a pen. I have a pen collection, all kinds of different pens, because people leave pens on the table. People have left umbrellas. People have left scarves. People have left cups and garbage and a lot of other things. I have a bottle of Sprite on my table, just someone left last week. People leave things all the time. People almost never leave their phones. And if somebody does, 2 minutes later, they're knocking on the door. Why is that? Because people don't go too long without looking at their phone. Now, maybe people think that they're busy and they have to look at the phone. And maybe they are. And just, when you look at it, you'll see most people walking out of shul after mincha. The whole mincha was only 15 minutes. Most people, as they're walking out, are taking the phones out of the pocket. It's just how we're wired, unfortunately, by now in today's generation. So on some level, I believe that almost everyone could acknowledge where they're misusing or overusing their phones. And if this is what your wife is telling you, I don't think she's right for telling it to you. I don't think she's right at all, for that matter, I don't know. But just think about it. Maybe you'll do yourself good, in general, personally, by putting away your phone sometimes. And maybe interpersonally, by letting her know, not in a contest way of, so I'll put away my phone, more on you, nothing with you. Just letting her know, you pointed out to me that I'm on my phone too much. Thank you for pointing it out to me. I'll try not to be on my phone when I'm home. I'll try not to be on my phone the first half hour that I come home, or when the kids are going to bed or whatever it is. And very often, accepting it is a step in the right direction. Again, not to use against someone, but just to show that, you know, you said something and I'm taking it seriously. And I'd appreciate if you could take me seriously too, but that part you don't have to say right away. And this is something that I think could... It's not about keeping score and showing who's right and wrong, but about acknowledging that you're right. Overusing a phone and being addicted to a phone and not concentrating and not focusing and not communicating is a problem. Thank you for pointing it out to me. It doesn't matter if I'm more or less, you know, wrong than you. So there is such a thing as normal use of a phone. I'm not here to suggest that everyone's overusing their phones. But sometimes going to the other extreme, at least when you're home, is a good idea. I know people who don't take out their phone when they come home. There's enough time that you're outside to talk. Now, it's not always practical. You have to talk. Okay, so at least decide that you won't do it by supper. You won't do it other times. I think that if you do it, then even without using it against your wife, it will just make more sense when you tell her, you know, thank you for pointing it out to me. If it's possible, we could both do this for a certain amount of time. I'd really appreciate it. If not, I'll just try myself because I do understand that it's annoying when you're looking at the phone and talking to someone. Now, let me say this. If you're doing everything right, okay, you're making her aware of how much is bothering you the right way, in the right time. You're giving the right suggestions. You're not on your phone at all. So you're doing everything right, which maybe you are. Okay, you didn't tell me exactly. And if it really is out of range, which means just given the fact that you're describing it as totally crazy that she's always on her phone and never looking at you and talking to you. So I'm just putting it in that equation. If you're doing everything right, or you're trying everything right, or after I'm talking about this, you're going to try to do this right and do what you could and put away your phone and talk to her nicely, and it's still out of range, then sometimes you have to do something about it. I just didn't want to suggest that until now because first make sure that you're doing everything right and that it is out of range. But if you're doing everything right and it is out of range, then sometimes you have to put your foot down. People don't realize how much the fact that they're tolerating something is just making it happen. If your wife is talking to you from her phone and literally not looking at you or doesn't see you and doesn't greet you and doesn't notice you to an extreme, and I would assume that that means also that kids are running around and things are happening and things aren't the way they should. And I'm only saying this not because I'm assuming that this is the question of the situation at all, but because I hear it often about women that are either laying in bed on their phone a whole afternoon or about men that are on the phone and just not seeing the kids or whatever it is. If it's to an extreme, then chances are you might be tolerating it and that's why it's happening. Now, without going into fight mode, and this is where you always have to proceed with caution. And whenever I talk about these things, I'm always very cautious about how I'm suggesting something like this because I don't think you'll be able to get it right without guidance one-on-one. But sometimes the fact that you work along with it and you let it happen is enabling the problem. Somebody is sitting on their phone a whole time only because they know that somebody else is taking care. Or somebody else will kick in. Or somebody else will tolerate it. And it's okay. I can talk to you this way, even though it gets on your nerves. So without going into detail about how to not tolerate something and how to express clearly that, no, this doesn't work for me. We could either figure this out together or, just not gonna work along. I'm not going to sit there and communicate with you like this. And I'm not going to do things for you when you're dysfunctional like this. Now, very often, when you do it the right way, it works. You don't have to go into fight mode and start saying, you know what, if you can't look at me, I'm not talking to you. You don't have to say it that way. But very often, subtly and subconsciously, when you start pulling away just a little bit, and engage less, and be there less, and offer less, people will come running after you, in a good way. I'm saying again, this is sensitive advice, and don't do it the wrong way. And if you're not sure you're doing it the right way, then don't do it on your own. But very often, if somebody's treating a spouse the wrong way, and the other one is just letting it happen, then sometimes the right thing to do is that if you can't make it change in a healthy way, you can just slowly pull away without a fight, just clarifying that you need a certain amount of love and warmth and connection. If you don't have it, then you can't work along. And very often, somebody will be able to give it to you only because they see that you're not tolerating it. People don't realize how much of abusive situations or how much of abusive behavior or dysfunctional behavior is only happening because someone else is letting it happen. You can't be a mommy of children or a wife stuck on your phone all day if there isn't somebody else that's allowing it to happen. And same thing is vice versa. So I think I said enough to imply that, you know, after trying your best and doing your own introspection and communicating properly and understanding the issue and not getting too tough on someone, there is always a time and place where you just don't allow things to happen by putting your foot down. So yeah, this is the generation we live in, and this is probably what we're going to be dealing with forever until things get worse, Chas v'Shalom. You know, I once heard a speaker talk about this topic, about how people are so connected to devices that they don't have time for each other, they don't see each other, and he said he once came to a Shei Ubruchus and it was late. By the time he got there, the Chuznik Kala were leaving already, and he saw them coming out, and he wanted to say Mazel Tov, and they were both on their phones, texting people. Chuznik Kala coming out of their Sheva Bruch was both on their own phones. And he said, whenever he talks about it, people always joke, oh, were they texting each other? That's not the point. The point is that people aren't here. They're not here. They're not walking out of their Sheva Bruch. They're not looking at each other. They're not looking at people coming to the Simcha. They're not coming, you know. It's sad what the world has come to. So I think that, you know, just to recap, yes, phone addiction and any addiction is real, and it's just good to realize what you're dealing with, just to be understanding of it and to try to overcome it and to try to understand the person who's trying to overcome it and to realize that these things aren't always easy. Communicating about anything that's not being taken well or anything sensitive has to be done with caution and according to the right rules. It's always good to look inside and see if you perhaps have what you could do on your end, you know, to make things better and that you're not doing the same thing the other person is doing. And then to know when just to stop tolerating things and say, listen, I'm not going to work along with this. So I think this goes back to the, I don't want to Chaz v'Shulam imply this is Yankov and Isov, you know, the person doing something wrong is not an Isov, but B'shnai Yitzreichu, the idea of noticing something bad and saying, you know what, maybe I have some of that in me, let me take care of mine. And even if not, and I don't have anything bad, at least let me notice that this is really not pleasant and I'll make sure to do my best not to fall into the same trap. And then slowly, hopefully be able to help out the other person to get out of the trap. And I have yourself with the right understanding of one another, and the right Siyat Lishmaya, and the right introspection, the right communication, be able to live together.
You've just experienced another Torah class brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.